Continuing in mitzvah Shin Mem, which is the mitzvah to give back property to its original owner on the Jubilee year. And it says, Uvayish she'ein bo arba amos al arba amos einu nikra bayis. We said last time that if you sell a house in a walled city, then you have 1 year after the sale to buy it back. And if you do not buy it back from the person who bought it, or if they sold it to other people, whatever, it goes by 1 year after the original sale, then that house in the walled city belongs to the new owner forever. Whoever is, hand it is in after a year, it belongs to them forever, and it does not return in the Yovel. The Yovel has no effect on this purchase, which is in contrast to a house in an unwalled city, which is most houses nowadays, which does not have this restriction that it does not go back in the Yovel. It does go back in the Yovel, and you can redeem it any time, even within the first 2 years, which is not the case by a field, which cannot be redeemed within the first 2 years after the sale. So a house in an unwalled city has the leniencies both of a house in a walled city and of a field to the advantage of the original owner. So the Sefer HaChinuch says that what's called a house over here, that a house is the only building which is 4 amos by 4 amos. If it's less than 4 amos by 4 amos, then it is not called a house, and it will not become permanently attached to the new owner after a year if it's in a walled city. And we know that this rule has other applications as well, that a bias has to be 4 amos by 4 amos. The one that's most commonly applied nowadays is a mezuzah, that a room that is less, a bias in halacha doesn't mean just a whole house with lots of rooms. A bias can often just mean one room. So a room that is less than 4 amos by 4 amos is not required to have a mezuzah. It also has relevance for tzaras, that there are specific rules when you come into a house that's afflicted with tzaras. So if a house that it cannot become afflicted with tzaras if it's less than 4 amos by 4 amos in size, which is pretty small. This room is very, most of us would think that for a house, this room would be rather small, but this room is
house on the prairie.
Very generously 4 amos by 4 amos, much more.
This room is much bigger than that, no?
It is, yeah. I'm saying, but you think of this, as a small room, but nevertheless, it could even be a house in halacha, it could even be smaller than this room. Uvirushalayim ein habayis nechlat ba. So there's a special exemption for Yerushalayim, that in Yerushalayim, even though it's a walled city, certainly, and that if you would think that if someone sold a house in Yerushalayim and did not redeem it within the year, that the house would now become permanent property of the new owner and would not return in the Jubilee year. Nevertheless, there's a special exemption of Yerushalayim, because the Torah says that I shall give you in the land that I shall give you, and Yerushalayim was not given to Shvatim. Yerushalayim was not, even though it was physically in the tribe of Binyamin or Yehuda, nevertheless, it was considered to be an extraterritorial,
like Washington, D.C.
Well, right. So Washington, D.C., you could have the same thing. It's sort of physically within Maryland. But it's not actually part of the state of Maryland. A very similar concept, although it's like more like Vatican City.
Yeah,
that's completely surrounded. In Washington D.C., you can at least sort of draw a border around it.
Yeah. About four by four house, 4x4. Is it by area or is it by lengths and widths? Like you say, 4x4.
That's an excellent question. So this is a famous comment. This is considered to be a famous machlokes between the Rambam and the Rosh regarding specifically by mezuzah. Fully resolved. The Taz, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, says that he thinks that really everyone agrees that it has to have length by width. He doesn't think it's a machlokes at all. But that's an excellent question. That's not an issue that's not 100% resolved. V'ir shegagoseha chomasa, ein dina kimukefes choma. Ele boinan shetia la choma milavad gagoseha. That it literally means that the roofs of the houses serve as the wall. So that means that there's no external wall, but rather the houses themselves are built in such a way that they touch each other at the perimeter of the city, and they sort of form an automatic wall around the city, that the city is surrounded, but it's by the walls of the houses as opposed to its own wall. So the din is that does not work. You need an actual external, independent, separate wall, and the walls of the houses do not count.
This is from the story of Rahab, actually. We had houses which had, were, in fact, the wall. Well, that was a case where, in fact, it looks like she could be able to stick her head out the window through the wall of the city,
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
That was,
Yeah, but you don't know if the wall exclusively consisted of that. You don't know exactly how the city was built. But again, it doesn't really matter because, you don't know that Jericho fell into this category.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Don't know for sure.
The falls fell down after the blowing of Shofar. So what happened then to the Rahab's house? That's the question.
It didn't fall down. That was specifically spared.
Yeah, it divine is spared.
Yep. Uva'inan gamkein shehukfa choma Techila ve'achar kach nisyashva. It has to have the wall built first to delineate the perimeter of the city. Aval nisyashva ve'achar kach hukva. There was just some grouping of houses that people, a little village where people gathered together. Ein zo ir choma. It did not consider to be a walled city, even though they subsequently built a wall around it. It has to be, you say, this is going to be a walled city. You build the wall, and then you inhabit it with houses. Ve'ein somchin ela al choma mukefes b'shah shekavas Yehoshua es ha'aretz. So the status of a walled city for the purpose of these rules of returning a house in it applies only to cities that had a wall at the time that Yehoshua conquered the land. If there would be a new city built after that time, then it would not have this rule, even though it had a wall first and then it had the houses built inside. It would not have this rule, and it would be considered like an unwalled city, and the house would not be permanently go to the new owner after a year. So, v'cheivan shigalu b'churban rishon batla kedushas ir choma. So when they were exiled the first time, so the holiness of walled cities ended. So any city, again, so that would mean that any city that was walled at the time of Yehoshua now has no more halachic significance after that time. That the clock restarts.
No Shushan
Purim,
then.
I'll get to Shushan Purim in a second. V'lechsha'ala Ezra b'viyashniya, and then when Ezra came back after the exile, even though it was just part of the Jewish people, it wasn't the entire Jewish people. Niskaju kol ha'arim ha'mukafos choma be'oso ha'ei. So since he re-sanctified the land of Israel, then all the cities that were walled at that time, they became the new ones that this rule should theoretically apply to, even though, practically speaking, the rule of Yovel did not apply at that time, because it wasn't kol yoshve ha'aleha, it wasn't all the tribes dwelling in their proper places. And it was just a theoretical thing. It was Ezra came back, and that's when the clock started ticking again. That's when the holiness of the walled cities reappeared. So all that was frozen in time. All the cities that had a wall at that time became the official walled cities. And if, 5 years later, all the rest of the tribes would have come back and they would have settled the land in the original way, it would have specifically been those cities that would have been applicable to this rule. It's halachically similar to the coming when they conquered land at the times of Yehoshua. So when they conquered the land, resettled the land at the times of Ezra, same thing. So the same thing that when Yehoshua came in the land, they started counting Shemitah and Yovel again, even though in the times of Ezra wasn't the Yovel wasn't applicable. And they sanctified the walled cities, and they had to give Trumas Maestras, etc. So the same thing was by Ezra. Yeah, but even Trumas Umaisus, according to many Shitas, was not Daraisa at that time because it wasn't most of the Jewish people living in the land of Israel. From that Trumas Umaisus, you don't need each tribe in its proper place. You just need physically most of the Jewish people living in the land of Israel.
Look, Trumas Umaisus, actually. During Yovel and Shemitah, actually, there were no... You didn't collect, you know, Truman.
No Truman's Maisus that year, yeah.
How did the Levium manage to survive?
Well, they had the same right as anyone else. They could go into someone else's field and pluck an apple.
Right, okay. So no, they were just first come, first serve, then. They didn't have special,
Right, like right. Okay. I mean, certain produce can last from year to year.
Right, okay.
So, although the Shemitah came right before that. Okay, yeah, wasn't push it. V'chein kishiyavu Mashiach levi ashlishes, the next time that when Mashiach comes and the land will be re-sanctified. So when Mashiach comes, then it will be the lands, the walled cities that will be at that time, which will officially have this rule. And the other cities will not have this rule that the house becomes permanently the property of the new owner after a year. And again, everybody say conquer will be part of Eretz Yisrael to be chayiv and shumas ma'aser. Shenemar v'yaviyacha Hashem elkecha v'amru makish yirosh chali yirosh savicha, that it says that when God will bring you back, it will be the same as when he brought you the first time. So this is very interesting. So it means that when Mashiach comes now, since Mashiach comes today, so there are no more walled cities basically in Eretz Israel. There's just Yerushalayim, which has this special din that it's not the rule of Bat Yerechom is not relevant in Yerushalayim, and there are no other walled cities.
Well, some of the Yeshuvim have like security fences around their perimeters.
If it's a real wall and it really surrounds the whole city, and it
the wall should serve as a security, prevent. A siege or something like that. Mm-hmm. Not like an Eruv type of wall. It's not going to.
Right. I mean, it's certainly not an Eruv of the strings, but if it's a real fence, so then it should work.
Yeah, but basically what they first build the settlement and then they build the wall usually. It's not.
Oh, so then you go. So then it's not that
really
good.
I mean, it has to be first, it has to be planned as a walled city.
Right, right.
So but nobody builds walled cities nowadays. It's not anymore a security barrier in any way.
Look, as I was telling Mrs. Hirsch last time, I said there's no mitzvah to build a walled city. There's no walled cities, so this rule doesn't apply. You know, so what? So there won't be walled cities.
Actually, all across the country, you have, basically walled communities. Gated communities. That's
Right. So
it still seems to be in popular minds. People seem.
I mean, it seems to have to be a city. It can't be. Just a small neighborhood. Yeah, and also, what if it's partially walled? What if, there's a wall mostly around, but there are a few gaps in the wall? Like in the old city, classically, the way a walled city worked, this talked about in Hilchos Shabbos also, that the doors of the city were closed at night so that people couldn't get in and out. Literally, you were stuck. You couldn't leave the city if you're at night. So that's why it says that for Shabbos at least, a wall of a city only works as an Eruv if the doors are closed at night, which is why, incidentally, that some people don't even carry in the old city of Yerushalayim nowadays, even though you think
it's permanently open.
Exactly. So even though you think, what do you mean? What is ridiculous. Everywhere you look around, it's a wall. Of course, this is a great Eruv. But they say, no. The din is that when you have a whole city and the wall, you have a wall surrounding it, so there's a special din that the wall doesn't count as an Eruv unless it really impedes people from getting in and out of the city. So since the doors of Yerushalayim, I don't think there are even doors. These are not even ones that can close. There are at the gates of Yerushalayim currently, there are no doors at all, let alone doors that close at night. So that's why some people feel that even that is, unless you hold by the big Eruv. So the big Eruv includes this. So fine. But if you want specifically a wall as opposed to the string, some people say that even the old city of Yerushalayim does not work as an Eruv.
Right?
Not necessarily. Could be the Raisa.
Because, if it's a wall...
The Gemara says that in Maseches Erevin, it says, Yerushalayim il moled lasoseh ne'ulos balayla chayovin oleha mishum reshus harabim. It says explicitly that if it were not the case that Yerushalayim, the doors were closed at night, you would be chayev for carrying there because of Rishus HaRabim. It sounds like it is a deraisa. And it depends how you interpret it. If you say that it's lav davka, that if it has a wall all the way around and it blocks off all the streets so there's no street running all the way through, so then it would not be deraisa. But if you take this Gemara very literally, so in any event, there's a special din by walls that are so big they enclose a city. In other words, maybe it's connected to the fact that some Rishonim bring that in order to carry on Shabbos, again, well, this is in the Rice or in the Rabbana, I can't necessarily tell you, but that in order to carry somewhere on Shabbos, you need to have what's called mechitzos murgoshos. You have to feel enclosed. If you don't, if you look around and you don't see any walls anywhere and everything looks open and free, then you would not be allowed to carry on Shabbos. There's a special halacha, you need to feel enclosed, so maybe it's connected to that.
If you're in the middle of the thing, you're not going to see the wall, so you're not going
to. Right, so it's a shaila how big? How big it means not to have mechitzas morgoshos. Yeah. Yeah, some people say, you know, in contrast to sort of, not so this is relevant to Chazei Erevin, but what we've just been learning about the walls of the city, that the buildings that can't count as the walls of the city. So some people feel that if you take a boat and you go around the island of Manhattan, so you see that it's mostly enclosed by walls.
Right.
So meaning that it's so right, but the pirzos, the idea would be, according to the people who want to be lenient on this basis, is that the pirzos, the gaps in the walls, are only derabanan, provided that most of the perimeter of the area you want to enclose is actual walls. So they say, no, it doesn't count. Because the, you have this, it's not murgash, it's not, you don't feel enclosed. You don't have dlosos nulos balayla, that the walls actually have to impede traffic. But if the walls are just viewed as the walls of the buildings, and you have streets and, you know, cutting them off at every intersection, and you have also bridges. And we have bridges that, you know, go straight over, and nobody pays any attention to these walls, and these walls don't count for the purpose of Erevin, and you would still have a still have Rishus HaRabim.
Yeah, there is a mission in Erevin about pilgrims going to Yerushalayim, and there are wells that are enclosed by this, really not walls, it's just
yeah. And then, but you feel enclosed.
But then it says, you know, and even if Rishus HaRabim goes through those, it's still good enough.
Right, because the idea is that within those. He was making reference to the fact that there's a special leniency by wells because people need water.
Saying about the Arisa, in terms of the Arisa, and if you have like Yerushalayim and you have the gates which aren't closed, this is the wells is much more lenient than that. It's
a much smaller area. It's a much smaller area, and it's not a whole city. Again, the rules of Erevin. Part of the problem why you have so many different opinions about all these things is because in the times of Chazal. You know, the conceptual underpinnings of the laws of Erevin are not very much discussed, are not laid out explicitly in Chazal, because back then it was pretty pushit. You know, you had small alleyways, and those, if you have a minor, you know, tikkun, if you put just a delineation at the end of the alleyways, you carried there, everyone felt enclosed, it was tiny, you know, you carried in your house, in your courtyard. And the big streets of Rishus HaRabim and Shalom Al Yisrael, everything was pretty straightforward. But the problem is that nowadays, everything is laid out completely differently. The cities are completely different. So you are forced to one of two conclusions. Either you hold, like some people say, well, the cities nowadays are laid out completely differently. The streets don't run from one end to the other. You have this and that, this reason, that reason. So therefore, it's totally different from the times of Chazal. Therefore, we should be lenient. Therefore, we don't have Rishus HaRabim nowadays at all. And their opinion says, no, it's the opposite. The cities are built totally differently from the times of Chazal, the streets are much bigger, they run, you know, continuously from end to end, even if it's not completely straight. So then it's more machmir than the times of Chazal. We should have more Rishus HaRabim nowadays than in the old days. Okay. That's why you have min hakotzel hakotzel. That's why some people say that the Erevin in Manhattan is the best Erevin in the world, and some people say that the Erevin in Manhattan is bad. It's worse than anywhere else. So, yeah. So you have all these different opinions because the conceptual underpinnings are not clearly laid out. But in terms of what you're making reference to is the Pasei Biros, which are when you have, like, the area enclosed by two walls at each corner. So, but there, it's very much more closely delineated. The idea is you feel much more closed because you look at each corner, it creates like an imaginary square even. that it's then which is not the case by a city which is lacking, which is much bigger pirtzos and it's lacking that type of delineation. Yeah.
The more general question. I mean, we maybe talked about this last week, but most of the Shia right now, all we have left are Levium and the tribe of Yosef. What do we right now?
Yehuda.
We don't have any more.
Maybe they'll come back.
We don't know. I mean, there are people from other parishes don't know.
Right, so we'll have to get Eliyahu HaNavi to tell us who's from which tribe, and the best we can do. Look, we'll have to figure out at the time. We'll figure it out. We'll try to. We'll have to reorganize Eretz Yisrael, and we're going to need a lot of divine assistance. We're not going to be able to do this completely by ourselves. That would not wouldn't quite work.
You turn to the Be'eros, it says the city could be as large as you want. I mean,
But not the gaps. If you have the four things at the corners, so you need to add extra walls in the middle, and the gaps aren't too big.
I'm saying it can say as large as you want, and the Rishus HaRabim passing through it, and it still would be.
Yeah, but the Rishus HaRabim. No, Rishus HaRabim has a minimum dimension of 16 amos wide, and the gaps in the Pasi Biros are only allowed to be 13 and a third amos wide.
That's correct.
So you can't. You could be in the middle of Rishus HaRabim, but you can't have something that has a 16 amma gap and still be kosher as an Eruv.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's another area? Someone asked about Shushan Purim. So the source in the Torah, by the way, for this is that it says, Habayis Asher Ba'ir, Asher lo choma, a house which is in a city that has a wall. So asher lo choma, that has a wall, or there is a wall unto it, more literally, is spelled in the Torah, normally to it, is spelled lamed vav. And here it's spelled asher lo choma, means, it says spelled lamed aleph, which means not. So the Chazal learned from this that it means that even if the city does not currently have a wall, it goes by the time that the land was sanctified. So in the time, in the original Kiddush, when they actually were knowing the rules of Yovel, so a city that had a wall from at the time of Yehoshua bin Nun, even though the wall had been knocked down since then, nevertheless, this rule still applied. Because Asher Lo Choma, that has not a wall, meaning that it used to have a wall, but now it currently doesn't. That's why we learn out that the Torah spells it a funny way of Lamed Aleph instead of Lamed Vav. So there's an allusion to the idea of not, as well as to the idea of to it, unto it. So this is similar to the rule of Shushan Purim. So at the time when the Purim miracle happened, so Eretz Yisrael was desolate. So they thought, so Shushan, as we know, the rest of the cities in the Persian Empire finished their dealing with their enemies on the 14th of Adar, and Shushan got an extra day, and they finished dealing with the enemies on the 15th of Adar. So Shushan celebrated Purim on the 15th, and the other cities celebrated it on the 14th. So it was considered to be a little bit of a slap in the face there at Yisrael to say, Shushan's going to celebrate Purim on this special day, and Eretz Yisrael has to celebrate with everyone else. So it says, so no, the Chosh of the cities in Eretz Yisrael, meaning the ones that were surrounded by a wall at the time of Yehoshua bin Nun, at the time of Yehoshua. Remember, there was no second Kiddush yet. That was the original Kiddush Aretz, the sanctification of the land. But it said, those are going to celebrate Purim with Shushan. They're going to celebrate with a capital city. They're going to get Chshivas. And that was giving an extra honor to the cities in Eretz Yisrael, which at the time were desolate. Although it doesn't only apply to cities in Eretz Yisrael, because once the rule applies, the prize applies across the board. If there would be, there would be a city in Chutz Laaretz that was really, really, really old, and it had a wall at the time of Yehoshua ben Nun, so it would also celebrate Purim on the 15th. And there were Jewish communities that lived in really ancient cities, and they actually did, since they weren't sure which was the correct day. So they used to celebrate Purim, or at least not celebrate, not get drunk or whatever, but they used to read the Megillah again on the 15th. One such example was Prague. So Prague, I don't think, was actually surrounded by a wall at the time of Yehoshua ben Nun, but they thought...
It wasn't a Prague.
Why not?
Because at that point, this was, it was a barbarian area, like the port city, like that. No. But, actually, we should know from the Romans. you know, what you're talking here about, right, this is the, you know, the whole area, you know, was had the barbarian tribes. There weren't any cities at all.
Right, so that...
Right.
They were only... Okay, but... Lemaisa, I don't think it's true, but the... there were certain points in history or certain people who were machmir to read the Megillah on the 15th in Prague because maybe it was a city that was surrounded by a wall at the times of Yoshua bin Nun. And some in Baghdad also,
Baghdad.
Jewish community in Baghdad also thought that. They also, there were some that were machmir like that. But nowadays we basically assume that it's pretty much only Yerushalayim, which is a city that is currently inhabited by Jews, which certainly was surrounded by a wall at the times of Yoshua bin Nun, I guess. Yeah. And there are certain places in Eretz Yisrael where they're machmir because they're not sure. But Yerushalayim, I believe, is the only city where they celebrate Purim only on the 15th because we're absolutely certain that there was a wall around the city at the time. There's some people, even in Bnei Brak, they're machmir to read the Megillah on the 15th because it's close to Yafo. So maybe Yafo is one of these cities. Okay, but maybe Bnei Brak is too far away anyway, even if it is close to Yafo. Tzfas, I think some people are machmir. Hebron, maybe. But Yerushalayim is the only place where they celebrate Purim only on the 15th. But you have this, it's a very similar idea that it doesn't have to be surrounded by a wall nowadays, as long as it was surrounded by a wall at the times of Yehoshua. But there, it was permanently fixed in time as the time of Yehoshua. It wasn't here. It wasn't updated to the time of Ezra, and it's not going to be updated to the time of Mashiach.
But this is a stake of Rabbanan, though. The Chris Megillah is a Rabbanan, so in this case, if you really aren't sure why...
Yeah, but it's a specific takana, I believe. It was a specific takana that if there's really a legitimate doubt, then you read on the 15th as well. There's a machlokas rishonim about this. Not everybody agrees with that. Some say you just have to do the 14th. It's a whole sugya. Maybe we can have a shir on it a different time. But lemaisa, people are machmer. Some people are machmer. Okay, v'yaser prateh b'masech ezerchin. This is found in Masech ezerchin. V'nuheges v'zchar munikevos b'Eretz Yisrael v'zmanshiyah. Well, no, it applies to males and females in Eretz Yisrael at the time when the yovel is applicable. It's only applicable when all the tribes are dwelling in their proper places. And if you violated this and you maintain the land in your possession, and you didn't return it to the owner, you neglected to perform this positive commandment, you are to be very severely punished. Again, not at the hands of the earthly court, but divinely you're going to be very severely punished. It's as if you deny the Genesis, meaning that you deny that God created the world, and it's really his right to tell you when to return land to a different owner and when to keep it for yourself. Mitzvah Shin Mem Aleph, 341. Mitzvahs Pidyon HaNachalos Shehein Tochair Ad Hashlamas Shana. The mitzvah to redeem the ancestral lands that are inside a city until the end of a year. Shehein Pidyon HaNachalos Shehein Tochair HaMukev Eschoma Ad Hashlamas Shana Achas. That you can redeem your possessions that are inside a walled city until 1 year. Again, we discussed some of the laws of this, and in the last mitzvah here, it's a specific mitzvah to redeem the redemption of the houses in a walled city can be until a year. And it will not return in the Jubilee year. That this, the reasoning for this, the presumed reasoning for this, is that it's an indication of how much we're supposed to love Eretz Yisrael. That we shouldn't just allow our property to languish in the hands of someone else, but we should try to get it back as soon as possible. We know that we only have a year, and after a year, it's going to be gone forever. Unless they want to sell it back. So that the person who sells it should try to buy it back quickly. You can buy it back at any time during the course of the year. So unlike the rule of when you're buying back a field that will come in the Yovel where you deduct the amount of money, you prorate it based on how many years you sold it until the Yovel, So if you want to buy it back after half the year, so you give him back only half the money, for example. So here, if you sold your house for $1 million and he dwelled in it for 11 months. This is fancy. Whatever. Too much fancy math here. But let's say you sold it for $1 million, and the guy, it's almost time for him to gain permanent possession. After 11 months, you come and you say, "Hey, I want my house back here," and you have to give him. And you have to give him $1 million. You do not deduct any money for the time that he lived there. In other words, you might think that you shouldn't have to pay back the full price because it's already been used more. That's not the case. You have to pay the exact amount of money that you sold it for. It's like a loan. It becomes like a loan. Again, the rules of ribis we'll discuss in 2 mitzvahs from now. That's a shame. But ordinarily, this would not be allowed because it's like he got to use your house and he gets his money back. So it's in the advantage. It's as if he lent you the money, and you gave him ribis that he got to. Not only are you paying him back his money, but he got to use your house as well, which is like ribis. Mm-hmm. This the Torah specifically allowed it here. It said of the transaction should be this way. So it's a shaila whether this type of ribis is aser derais or aser derabanan. So if it's aser derais, it means that the Torah specifically legislated in this place. That you should, it is permissible. But if it's the Rabbanan, it's okay. The Rabbanan, the Chacham, didn't impose the prohibition in this situation. V'she'en ha'krovim po dimosa. So ordinarily, it's a mitzvah on the close family members to redeem ancestral property. So here, the family members do not redeem the house. El ha'mocher ba'atzma, only the seller himself. Zeh das Rambam zichron levracha. This is the Rambam shita v'lochein nira b'kiddushin. In Maseches Kiddushin, there's a whole discussion going back and forth as to whether the relatives can redeem it or not. Sefer HaChinuch thinks that the conclusion of the Gemara sounds like the relatives can redeem it, but the Rambam holds that the relatives cannot redeem it. Ve'eino love v'goel ela yimkor nechasim acherim. You're not supposed to borrow money in order to be able to purchase your house back. But if you have other properties, you can sell that property and purchase your house back. Because this is, you know, chibas aretz. If you, the other stuff is not something that stays in your family. You don't own real estate in the Holy Land. So you should sell other property, movable property perhaps, and try to buy your house back. So if you earned money, or somebody gave you money as a present, then you could use that to redeem the house. And you can't do it half by half. You can't pay half the house, pay for half the house at one time, and then a few months later another half. No, it has to be all at one time. If the purchaser died within the year that you're supposed to buy it back, you can redeem it from the hand of the heir, which is usually the son. If the seller died, so then your heir inherits your ability to be all this. The rest of the details are discussed in Maseches Erchin. It applies in Eretz Yisrael, males and females, in the time when the Jubilee year is applicable. Mitzvah Shin Men Beis 342. Shelo Lishanos Migrashe Are Halevim V'Sadosehem. Not to change the usage of different parts of the Levite cities. What does that mean? Shelo lishanos migrashe are halevim v'sadoseihen. Kilomar sheliachziru ha'ir migrash v'la migrash ir. So the way it worked is you have the city, and you have a migrash, a own open area outside the city, and then after that you have fields that are planted by the people who live in the city. So you shouldn't build up outside the city. You should leave the Migrash, the open area, like Central Park. You don't build buildings on Central Park. You don't change the layout of the city at all. That the rest of the tribes have to give certain cities to the Levites. The Haim are Boim Ushmoni, or the 48 cities. Im Shesh are Miklat Yubayan. Included in that were the six, what are called, cities of refuge, where people who committed,
manslaughter,
yes. Manslaughter could flee there and avoid being killed by the family of the person, of the victim. So they got 1,000 Amma of empty area outside the city. It's a nice place just to take a stroll, or, you know, just it looks nice when you're approaching the Levite city, so you'll be like, you know, what a nice landscape. You'll get in the mood, you know, to get into the Levite city, the holy city. And after the Migrash, which is the empty area, the park, I guess, then you get the area for fields that are actually used for planting and vineyards. Every city needs a vineyard, right? Mm-hmm. Can't have a city without a vineyard.
How would that work? Kiddush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things for the leniencies of Chamar Medina. In certain situations for Kiddush, some say even Friday night, we don't pass like that, but for Abdullah certainly, and most hold for Shabbos day as well, so there's certain situations where you can use Chamar Medina. You don't have to use, you could use instead of wine another choshev beverage for that is in that place. So some say that the leniency of Chamar Medina only applies if there are no vineyards within a certain distance around the city. Okay. So then it goes nowadays, well, hey, none of our cities have vineyards within that distance around the city. All our wine is shipped from California, from Napa Valley, from Eretz Yisrael, from France, from Bordeaux, whatever. So, what do you mean? So
Bayonne, right?
It was made there, but the vineyards aren't there.
Okay, right.
The vineyards are not within that.
Right,
there are. You could get there. I'm not saying all of them are in France. I just mean they're not within a close distance around New York City. Mm-hmm. So, some people say, what do you mean? So the leniency of Chamar Medina, should, according to these opinions, should apply for us, even though you walk into any store, there's wine galore,
right.
Grape juice galore.
Right.
Yeah, okay, so it's...
The wine's here, just the vineyards are not here, but the wine's
right,
here.
Right. So in the olden days, if there were no vineyards around the city, it was much more difficult to obtain wine. You could get it, but it wasn't so much it. Sechesota. Uvahamaniya bezesh l'shanos inyanim eile l'olam. You shouldn't change these things forever. Alkein ne'amar usedei migrash arihem lo yimacher. It should not be sold, it says literally. V'chein b'shekein ba'aperush aloshen mechirazo k'lomar lo yishana. It doesn't literally mean you shouldn't sell it. It means you shouldn't change it. D'ilo v'mechira mamesh lo kamar sheferish k'siv g'ulas olam tiyel alavim. It says that the levim can redeem their fields, their cities, fields, whatever, at any time. They don't have to, so it's not limited. And there are any circumstances, so it doesn't mean lo yimacher, it shouldn't be sold, because they can get it back at any time. Limkor means you can sell it, but you can get it back at any time. So what do you mean? It can't really mean lo yimacher, that it shouldn't be sold, because then there'd be no institution of geula. There'd be no redemption. It wouldn't be necessary. Mishor she ha-mitzvah levi she'ari ha-leviyam ayu nechonin l'tzorchei kol shara shvatim, that the Levite cities were needed by the rest of the Jewish people as well. It's the Levites that were chosen for the service of God. All their business was with wisdom. They didn't have to work for a living. They didn't have to, you know, work the land. It was the way people made money at those times. They shall teach your statutes to the Jewish people. Since they were the most wise of all the tribes, so the Jewish people needed to go consult with them all the time. When they had issues, they had to go consult with the Levim. And some of the Levite cities were the Arei Miklat, which were needed by anyone who committed manslaughter. ומתוך כך גם כן היו עיני כל ישראל עם מריאם כי לא ידע האדם הילד יום. You never know what's going to happen, so therefore the Jewish people are supposed to be concerned with the welfare of the Levite cities. ולכן היה בדין ליאוס אוסן ארים אשר יד הכל שווה בהם ולב הכל עליהם ליאוס בתכלס היופי והחמדה. So these cities, which are so important for the rest of the people, have to be well-groomed. If you don't have the nice park outside and then the area outside, okay, so that for the vineyards, have to be the dimensions has to be just right. The shevach kol am Yisrael b'chach, it's considered to be a positive thing for the whole Jewish people if this is the case. When they came ba tzavo aleihem shelo lishanos binyanam davar, so don't change it. We give you instructions on how to make a Levite city, so don't change it. You're just going to make it worse. Ki adon hachochma yisdan v'tiknan v'higbel gvulam v'yar ki chein tov. God says, "Hey, these are the dimensions I want, and these are going to be these are the good. This is the way it should be good, and so don't change it. These are the way I want these special cities to be." V'chol chiluf acher. So if you change what God's plans, then it's you're just going to make it worse. If you try to improve on it, you're going to end up making it worse. Midini haMitzvah, Masha Amru Zichronon Livracha, Ki Milavad Elu Ashlosha Elef Amos Shamarnu. Besides these 3,000 Amos outside the city, Shehein Bein Migrash Ustado Suchramim. So these include the park and the fields and the vineyards. So outside, you have something that's even outside all these measurements, which is the cemetery. Every city needs a cemetery. Not like nowadays where, you know, we have our cemeteries in Long Island and New Jersey. There are no cemeteries in New York City. I mean, there are, of course. There are, but I'm saying there are no new ones being... there are no new... Right, but in those days, when those cemeteries were established, those were the boondocks. You know, that was right outside the city. Every city needs a cemetery. You have cemeteries in Manhattan.
Right.
Because in those days, that was the boondocks. You know,
Upper
above...
Manhattan especially.
Right. There's the one in Chelsea, the Spanish and Portuguese cemetery. Now it's very prime real estate. And the olden days was, what is it, on 26th Street, something like that. So 26th Street was, sorry, oof, it's uptown, you know, way uptown. So,
right.
Okay. Shneimar migra shehem yuliv hamtam v'lir chusham ulchol chayosam. So it says that the migrashim, that these areas right outside the city, are for chayosam, the living purposes. V'aperesh uzel lechayim nitnu v'lo lekvura, not for purposes of the dead, meaning burial. Masha amru gam kein shakohanim leviim shemachrus de sodem misadoseim obayis atilu birchoma nigalim l'olam. They have no limitations on when they can redeem their property, even if it's a house within a walled city, or if it's a field, or an ordinary people would not be allowed to redeem it for the first 2 years. They are allowed. Belfilu miyad hektesh, even if they sold it to the temple treasury. Shenemar gulas olam tiel alaviim forever. V'Yisrael shiyarish avi imo levi hareze goel kalaviim. So if you have a Yisrael who inherited a field or property from his grandfather who was a Levi, his mother's father, so then that property is considered Levite property still, even though it's currently owned by a Yisrael, not a Levi,
right.
And it he would be allowed to redeem it forever. The end of Maseches Erchin. V'hagias mitzvah zo be'eretz Yisrael bizman she Yisrael sham. This mitzvah applies in Eretz Yisrael when the Jewish people are there. Bein b'leviim, bein b'yisraelim. This mitzvah is relevant both to Leviim and non-Leviim, because you could hire a Yisrael architect, you know, to expand the city into the Migrash, so that's not allowed.
And Leviim.
Fine. So the Shekol Chayovin Shalashanos Mizchar Menekevos, males and females, Shekol Chayovin Shalashanos Shalosh Mekomos Amrul Olam, that these three types of places, the city and the park and the fields, would seem that if you, the contractor who's building, who's expanding the city beyond the borders and is encroaching on the territory of the Migrash, so you say, "Hey, Mr. Contractor, stop building." "No, I'm building anyway." And you take him off to business, and he gets the full penalty of Malkus. If you add one extra brick, are you chayev? He's not sure. Chacham b'ni Yudehu. Just understand this. I'm not sure what the shear is for how much you add on. The Rambam, in his famous words at the very end of Hilchos Shmitah V'Yovel, explained this mitzvah. Lama lo zacha Levi benachalas Eretz Yisrael v'zasayim echav. Why did the tribe of Levi not get a portion of Eretz Yisrael? Mipnei shehuvda lavo dashem ulasharso lahoros drachav ayisharim. Because the tribe of Levi was set aside to serve God and to teach His commandments. Ulafika chuvdal midar keholam, and that's why. He was, the tribe of Levi was removed from the earthly, engaging in earthly affairs. Lo orchil milchama kishar Yisrael, you don't participate in the wars. Below, Sashaila, what type of war he's talking about? Chemes Rishus, Mechemes Mitzvah, maybe they did. Below Nochalin, below Zochin La'atzman, Bechoach Gufan, Elem Chel Hashem. They are the army of God. They don't inherit unto themselves. Shenemar, Baruch Hashem Chelo, that God bless your host, your army. Vehu Baruchu. There are a lot of drushes in that pasuk, but that's I guess the simple meaning. Vehu Baruchu Zikar Lahem Chelko, and he and God gave unto them his portion. Shenemar, Ani Chelkecha V'Nachalascha. God says to the Levites, I am your portion and your inheritance. But, okay, so that's why. Because the Shaila is, so this is a famous discussion nowadays regarding a kola. Okay, we'll get to that in a second, actually. Well, Velo Shevet Levi Bilvad Bichlal Zeh. And it's not just the tribe of Levi. The tribe of Levi are just a Shevet that are intrinsically designated for this purpose, and everyone participates. But if there's another Jewish person, but if somebody accepts upon himself to join this army, he doesn't become a Levi, but if he wants to totally dedicate his life to serve God, if you want to study Torah and to teach others, and you don't have to, you shouldn't think about money. Asher bikshu b'nei adam, you shouldn't deal with all these things, all these earthly matters. Brazen is kadosh lios kodesh kadosh, if you become holy of holies, bi Hashem nachaloso le'ol me'olamim. And God will be his inheritance forever. V'yizge ba'olam hazeh b'davar ha'maspik lo kemo shezika zacha sheva levi. And you'll be assured, even though you don't get an official payment in the form of maisris, of the tithes, which is what the tribe of Levi got, he nevertheless will be assured of financial being taken care of, at least being at least somewhat set, if you dedicate your life truly to the service of God. David says, Hashem menas chalki v'chosi ata tomi chareli. God, you are my portion, and you will determine my destiny. So the question is, this is the source for Kolel. This is what people say. People point to this Rambam at the end of Shemitah and Yovel, and they say, hey, this you see that this is why you should support people who are learning in Kolel, because they're dedicating their lives to the service of God. And God, it says in the Rambam that God promises those who truly dedicate their lives just to the service of God that they shouldn't have to take stock at all of earthly affairs. So there are a few problems with this. One is that the Levites didn't just sit and learn all day. It wasn't, this is part of the, you know, Rabbi Slifkin is fond of pointing out that this is like a mystical understanding of learning Torah, which I'm not discounting. There's a stream of thought that when you learn Torah, it creates, you know, it metaphysically is beneficial, just the learning. It is a cause unto itself. Rabbi Slifkin points out that the Levites didn't just sit and learn all day. They weren't just learning. They were serving in the Beis Hamikdash, and they were the teachers. They taught, you know, throughout the Jewish people. They were the ones who were basically designated to teach the Torah. So meaning that it was understandable why that they were expected to be supported by the rest of the Jewish people, because they were doing a public service. So the question is, what public service are people who are in Kol doing? So
metaphysical.
Rav Schechter always says that in YU we don't really have people who learn in Kol forever. We have we do have kolim. We have a kol that where you learn for a few years after getting smicha. You have a kol elyon where maybe you learn a few extra years and you get paid. Rabbi Schechter always says that's because when you give money to a kol, so with a balabatim, you know, choose a regular people who want to donate money. They choose to donate money to a kol because they want rabbis who are well trained. He said so. If you they just go for smicha and then you know they learn in yeshiva for 4 years, whatever it is, and they're out in the world teaching Torah. So that's, you know, you could be a big genius and, you know, figure everything out by yourself, and it could work. But it often is not enough, so they want them to learn Torah a little longer, so it's reasonable to expect some sort of support, and so that these people should not have to worry about business dealings.
So is it...
So this, these words that the Chinuch quotes in the, from the Rambam are have engendered a lot of controversy, but certainly, yeah, it's certainly people who perform a public service are, it's not unreasonable to expect to be supported. And if you truly do it lishma, that you really do it for the sake of God, so there is a divine promise that everything is going to work out for you. So which is why the people in Eretz Yisrael will tell you, people who really buy into the kol system, that learning Torah in and of itself is something that's worthwhile being supported by others.
Like their wives.
Smicha nowadays is just a convention. There's no real halachic significance in smicha. It's just a convention that once you know certain subjects, so then you get a diploma that says, you know, you may issue, you know, halachic ruling. It doesn't mean you're entitled to come up with totally original things. It just means that if somebody asks you a question and, they put their... pot, you know, on top of their parv countertop, you know, they have to kasher their whole kitchen. It means that you're allowed to tell them, you know, you don't have to do that. It means that there's a darga of halachic questions that people are again, there's no official diploma. Okay, now you're a real posik ador, and you can decide the big questions, you know, when a woman's husband disappeared, is she considered an almana? What's the status of brain death in halacha? What, you know, these huge shilas, you know, there's in vitro fertilization and from artificial insemination from a man other than a woman's husband. So is that a shilah mamzera? So these huge things are not to be decided by an average pulpit rabbi. So there's a darga, but there are a lot of shilas there in between. Between the putting your fleishik pot on your parv countertop and these things, so you have to. Everybody has to. You have to figure out. You have to be honest with yourself. People who claim to issue halachic rulings have to be honest as to what they know and what they don't know, and they have to defer to a higher authority. But people who really buy into the kol system, they say, you know, just look, you know, you see that this promise is coming true, that we don't have to worry, you know, about financial things, that we just have miracles. Somehow, you know, my people argue that the nisim, the miracles that take place in for the people who are learning in Kol and Eretz Yisrael nowadays, are is a testament to this Rambam that people who truly learn, just sit and learn L'shem Shemayim, and they don't work, will have their financial needs being taken care of. So okay, so maybe that was the case for a while because we needed the Kol system to rebuild Torah after the Holocaust, but nowadays there is certainly a move towards more working in the Haredi community because the lifestyle that they have currently or have had for the last 20 years or so, 30 years, is really not sustainable. So, again, the system, things tend to work themselves out, and we assume that God sees to it that should be the case.